Warning: the following is intended for mature audiences. It includes references to the use of illicit substances as well as crude humor. Also, it might make you a little sad if you're a big fan of Leonard Nimoy, because today we're paying tribute.
Yeah, so prepare for the feels.
Let's get it started. Health and long life, America. I'm Zach Nanimus.
I am Johnny Dim.
And you've just tuned in to the War Pod, part of the Space City Nerd Network. Don't forget that you can check out Warlocks : Games and Beer on YouTube. At Warlocks Brew. What is it? On Twitter. What's your Twitter?
It's Warlocks Brew, and on YouTube, you can just search for Warlocks Games and Beer as one word.
Yeah, but it's not advised.
You'll find it.
And if you check us out on YouTube, you'll be able to see our new smash hit video with one view, entitled Cheesy Popcorn.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, you should definitely check that one out. That is going to be a classic. And you can already feel it.
You can check us out on Facebook, Warlocks : Games and Beer. Tonight on the War Pod, we're going to be doing a superhero mashup between the Ghostbusters and Dr. Stephen Strange. We're going to talk about the new Power Rangers R-rated fan film, and we're going to have a breakdown on what exactly is the ultimate cheese. But first, I need to bring the energy down a little bit, because I'm sure all of you who listen to the podcast are aware that 2 days ago now, it was Friday, Mr. Leonard Nimoy passed away at age 83. He's a longtime sufferer of COPD, and he succumbed sometime that morning. And here on the War Pod, we wanted to, we just wanted to just have a little chat about Leonard Nimoy and everything he was to us in life.
Sure.
And everything he means to us in death. And the ramifications of the mystic quest that Johnny and I will go on to resurrect his old bones. Search for Spock style.
There you go.
So, Johnny, what weapons will you bring to our intergalactic mystic quest to bring back our most beloved Mr. Nimoy?
What weapons will I bring on our quest?
Yeah, we're going to need weapons.
How about a phaser?
Ooh, a phaser.
Yeah.
I am going to bring radiogenic weaponry.
Yeah.
Because I will destroy countless civilizations to get him back.
You know what also I would like to bring is, I forget the name of it, but that really cool Klingon two-handed sword-like stabby weapon.
Oh, what you're wrong about is how cool it is. You're referring to a Batleth. The cool Klingon weapon is the Mechleth.
Wait, which one's which?
The Batleth is the one you're describing. The cool one is the Mechleth.
Wait, I hardly described it. Which one is which? Do you describe them in your own words?
A Batleth is a piece of metal that has several handholds on one side. It's approximately 1.25 meters in length. It has a gentle crescent curve and blades on either end.
Yeah, that's the one I'm describing.
Yes.
Which one are you describing?
The Mechleth is a cross-handled piece of steel that, when handled correctly, actually runs up the length of the wielder's forearm, like a tonfa.
Okay, I think I've seen that one too.
Yeah. It is also an appropriate throwing weapon, and with properly applied leverage, you can actually snap a Batleth in half with it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I've seen it done. But yes, Mr. Nimoy did pass away, and there was something I wanted to share, because this is something that I actually didn't know. I'd heard some of his music, and I was familiar with his photography ahead of time, but I didn't know that he invented the Vulcan salute. Did you know
Oh,
that?
Really? No.
It was a story that he was telling some interview. It looked like a TV piece, but he apparently the first time that you ever see another Vulcan on the show is the Ponfar episode, where he's got to battle Kirk because his wife, T'Pol, she falls in love with Kirk because she's in heat too, and I think she sees him first. Okay, do you know the thing about Ponfar?
I know very little.
Okay, so Ponfar is the
No, in general, I don't know much. I'm losing my mind.
Well, I don't know much, but I know I love you. Johnny,
Yes.
kiss me.
No, continue with your story about the salute.
Okay, so Ponfar. The Vulcans are highly logical people, right?
Yes.
They don't do anything without purpose.
Right.
That includes mating.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, there's no such thing as Vulcan recreation. Everything's for a purpose. So, they have actually scheduled mating for when it would be most appropriate to have offspring. And it's become part not only of their cultural identity, but also their genetic identity. So every 7 years, they go into heat. And
Fun.
it's one of the only times where they experience, they naturally experience emotions. The emotions are lust and rage. Those are the only things that they get. And the females are producing a lot of pheromones. And the thing about Ponfar is that if you don't participate in Ponfar, you can die.
Right.
It will o Your emotions will overwhelm your central nervous system and kill you. So they have to go back to Vulcan, and so we're meeting another Vulcan for the first time, his future wife T'Pol. Wait, that's not no, that's that's
Tuvok's
Tuvok's wife. I'm
wife. Okay,
sorry.
I'm just kidding.
Nerds.
Okay, either way, we meet his Vulcan mate. Oh, you never had a human mate. We meet his Vulcan mate, and he's, they greet each other, and Nimoy kind of stops everything, and he's like, oh, hold on a sec. Humans like shake hands and wave at each other and give each other hand jive, fist bumps, and whatnot. There should be a Vulcan thing specifically for them. And they're like, okay, they're open to suggestions. It's the 60s, it's groovy, whatever. And he does the Vulcan salute, the three-pronged hand gesture that we all know and love.
Correct.
Now, the thing about this is that he actually saw this symbol when he was a little boy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because you know that he's Jewish, right? Well, he was
Yes.
Jewish. Okay.
Yeah.
So he was actually in a he was actually in temple, and they were doing an evocation of a spirit called, and I had this looked up just a second ago. Shekinah. They're doing an evocation of Shekinah. And what Shekinah is the female aspect of the spirit of God. Like, whatever God is, Shekinah is his female self, or its female self. Which is really cool that the Jewish faith respects that God essentially has two genders, or all genders, or no genders.
All at the same time.
Yeah. So they're evoking Shekinah, and the thing about the evocation of Shekinah is that you have to cover your eyes.
Because you can't
Because,
look at her.
huh? Seeing something of that level of beauty and power will kill you. So everybody in the pews—I don't think they call them pews—but they cover their eyes, and everybody up on stage, the rabbis—they're under talbits, which are prayer shrouds. And they were doing these cool chants in Hebrew, and a young Leonard Nimoy—he actually peeked. He wanted to see what was going on. And all of the rabbis are doing the Vulcan salute.
Nice.
Now, what the Vulcan salute is to the Hebrews is it's a very crude representation of the Hebrew letter Shin.
Right.
Which actually looks more like a W, which is why the symbol is three-pronged. And Shin is the first letter in Shekinah.
Okay.
So he was mystified when he saw this, the Shin thing going on, and it just stuck with him. So that day on the set, he was like, oh, how about this? And he thought it was so cool because it caught on so quickly. He said that people that same week it aired were giving him the Vulcan salute on the street.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and now we all do it to one another, and he was very glad that, you know, we all had, like, this secret handshake. Yeah, you know, Star Trek, right?
We're all secret Jews now?
But, yeah, well, he thought it was fun that nobody knew that we were secretly blessing one another.
That's awesome.
That's a fun little story that I wanted to share that I heard from Mr. Nimoy. Johnny?
Yeah?
I've shared. Well, why don't you... Why don't you pontificate on what you love about Mr. Nimoy?
Well, okay. I didn't watch a lot of original Star Trek stuff. And to be honest, I haven't seen a lot of stuff that even Leonard Nimoy is.
Richard Nixon.
Oh God.
Now all I
can't
see...
I can't get anything straight.
No, now all I can see is Nimoy up on a podium with two Vulcan salutes.
I knew you were going to say that.
I am not a crook.
I am not a Spock. No, okay, so I haven't seen a lot that he's been in, but everybody knows who he is. I'm very familiar with who he is and what he was about.
As far as original series is concerned, spoilers, we're going to be doing a top three. The only mention of original series on my list is actually my bottom three.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of original series. I love what it represents.
I'm not either. I have trouble getting through that show. It's not that good to me. The movies are much better though.
Mm-hmm.
But this is kind of how it sums up, I guess, my relationship with him as a fan.
You are the big spoon. Because while he was taller than you, you're still more of a bear. That's the nature of your relationship.
Is it?
Yep. It was very uncomfortable at the viewing.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's my story.
No, come on.
So, I saw a quote from Kevin Smith on Kevin Smith does a lot of Facebook stuff. And he said something in there that kind of wraps up, I think, how I feel about Leonard Nimoy. And Kevin Smith said something to the effect of, he was a friend that you've never met. He kind of had that energy about him. He always seemed fairly wise and friendly. I don't know if he ever, did he ever take a role as a bad guy in anything? I'm just curious because I've never seen him in a bad light. Right, he's never been the villain, except for maybe those Travelocity. Was it Travelocity or was it Priceline? The Priceline commercial. I think he bests Kirk, or you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was an episode of original series where a transporter malfunction takes Captain Kirk to an alternate dimension, where the Earth Federation Alliance is actually an empire,
mm-hmm.
With very archaic rules and hierarchical structure, where you actually kill to get promotions and stuff like that. And there is an evil Spock, and he's widely regarded as the evil Spock. And it's where we get the TV trope that you're evil if you have a goatee,
because
only real difference was that he had a goatee.
I like that. Yeah, they should have kept that going and when Data in Next Generation met his equal, he should have a goatee. I can't remember his name, but he does have another him.
His big brother Lore.
Yeah.
Yep, data and lore. Get it?
Yep.
Yep.
It's funny, I'm laughing on the inside.
Well, actually, they did something kind of along the same vein in Deep Space Nine, where the same they have a lot of episodes that deal with transporters being able to take you to that same universe, which is widely regarded as the Mirror Universe. And Major Kira in the Mirror Universe is actually a general for the what's the name of her planet? She's one of the generals for Bajor, and the only difference between the two of them really is that she wears a headband.
Yep, you gotta tell them apart somehow.
Okay, now as far as Mr. Nimoy being a bad guy, there was a car commercial that he did with Zachary Quinto.
Okay.
It's showing all the new features of, I think, the Audi or something. It's like got voice commands and stuff like that, and Nimoy's old, so he's like confused about how to look up directions, and the car's talking to him. And at one point, I think he literally like picks up some, and he says something reminiscent, something you'd normally say in a Star Trek communicator. And they're racing to the house. Zach is standing in the driveway, very cocky, just, well, looks like I beat you. Looks like I beat you to the house. And Nimoy gets out of the car, and he says, "We're not in the house yet." And he Vulcan neck pinches him and drops him.
I like it.
It's interesting talking about Nimoy like doing the Vulcan stuff, because he was very influential in the creation of all of the lore associated with Vulcans. Like, he did the salute, but also, did you know that they actually never talked about it in the original series? But he knows the exact reason why the Vulcan neck pinch works.
Oh
He
yeah.
had it all worked out in his head. He's like, you have to hit right there on that nerve, and you have to emit energy from your fingers. That only trained
Vulcans.
not Vulcans, because he does it in front of Kirk on one episode. I say I don't like original series, but I, for some reason, I'm a font of knowledge on the subject right now. But he does it in front of Kirk in order to get out of a prison cell. And Kirk is like, "I wish you'd teach me that someday." And he's like, "I have tried many times." Which alludes to the idea that, yeah, humans can do it. And if you remember, Lone Star did it in Spaceballs, and he's a human.
Oh God.
What?
That doesn't count.
Let's judges. Does Lone Star's Vulcan neck pinch count? He
So long.
not only did it, he called it the Vulcan neck pinch.
It's a spoof.
It's a Spock.
It's a spoofy Spock.
It's a spaffy stock. But no, I
It's
really
Pizza the Hot.
Oh, you're delicious. No, that's one of my favorite parts of this movie.
It creeps me out. I hate it.
Where he ate himself to death.
It's just the most disgusting creature.
Next, our review of Rocky Five
Yeah.
Thousand.
Oh, God.
No, I really like that Kevin Smith quote talking about how he's the friend you've never met.
Yeah, that's how he feels.
Because when you go through Nimoy's stuff, lately we've just been inundated with so much stuff. Looking at it back to back to back, the way that we've kind of the way that we all as a country have kind of been forced to in the past couple of days, there's a very clear theme in everything that Mr. Nimoy did or did, and that is peace and love.
Yeah.
He was very much a child of the 60s. Everything was just peace and love and good times and great oldies back to back, just everything. A and
Absolutely.
literally great oldies. He did a lot of folk song covers,
Uh-huh.
which actually, before the podcast, when we were trying to get the Skype recorder to work, I started singing the Big Rock Candy Mountain. And because Nimoy had done so many folk covers, Johnny Dim asked me if that was a Leonard Nimoy song. Oh no, he asked me if it was a Kermit the Frog song.
I did.
Yeah, and I was like, no, that's just an old folk song. And I was like, oh, that's the Leonard Nimoy cover I want. And I had like a little moment because like now that's impossible.
Yeah. You can't dream that anymore.
Yeah.
That's
Weird.
unfortunate.
It's super weird.
Well, and
Yeah.
well, I don't know.
Wait, okay, it might be possible. We can piecemeal it together.
No, I was thinking about Fringe because he was on Fringe. And I was going to say something, but I really have no context for it because Fringe wrapped up. It's done, but I have not finished it yet. So I really don't have anything to say about it. I was going to say something about the end of it, but it's already over, so
What about it?
it's pointless because it's already been done, like it's finished.
Well, still, if you're going to make a point, make your point.
There's no point to make. It's completely invalid because I just realized how stupid what I was about to say was. So I caught myself, and now you're forcing me back out onto the stage and say, "No, say that stupid thing. Say it. Say it, Johnny. Say that stupid thing you're gonna say."
Was it something akin to, okay, he may be dead and can't sing anymore, but maybe he can do some more episodes of Fringe. Maybe like a reunion tour.
It was just as stupid, so we're gonna move
Okay. Well, now I
on.
gotta know.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Now, Johnny, you were talking about how you hadn't seen much of him
Right.
before his death.
I just hadn't seen a lot of stuff, yeah, that he actually performed in. But it's interesting what I've uncovered just in looking at, trying to do research for what we were going to talk about. It's actually, and I knew he did music, but I never actually made the effort to go listen to it.
It's golden.
It actually, there's a lot of really good stuff.
Especially his Spock stuff.
Yeah. The two sides, what was it called? The two sides of Nimoy or something like that.
That was one that he did later. The first one was like Leonard Nimoy presents music from Mr. Spock. Such
Yeah.
classics as Twinkle Twinkle Little Earth.
Yes.
What did you th have you been exposed to much of his photography?
I did look it up, yeah.
What do you think?
I liked it.
What did you see? What did you see specifically?
A lot of the ones I saw were the black and white photos of large women without clothes.
Oh, that's his full body shoot. Or,
Yeah.
yeah. That's actually a specific burlesque group.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's called like Lots of Love or something like that. I remember he went out onto. Was it The Daily Show? I think it was The Daily Show. And because, once again, he was in the midst of controversy for his photography.
Yes.
Because, these are actually very large women that he's taking pictures of.
Yeah.
And he was like, and I think the point that they were kind of alluding to was, are you exploiting these people? Or, is this for shock value? And so Jon Stewart had the book and he was like, how would you describe this person? And he was like, as a beautiful woman. And like the crowd went nuts.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Did you see his Shekinah photography?
No.
This is actually the one that was, it wasn't as big a story, but it was more controversial. And it was a photo, it was a series of photographs that he did. The line was called Shekinah. It's based upon the same entity that we talked about earlier. And it's just a lot of Jewish religious imagery and nudes.
Oh, together?
Yeah. Because that's how he sees Shekinah.
Oh.
Is the perfect female form, or the not that any one picture is his ideal, it's the perfection itself of the female form,
Right.
along with the religious artifices. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, and there were actually a lot of religious leaders in the Jewish community that were kind of upset that
Yeah, I can imagine.
it was so salacious in their eyes, and he really didn't give a crap.
I wouldn't see him. What, I think he would very much prepare himself from any backlash anyway.
No,
Well, I'm saying he is. What I'm saying is, he not necessarily that he would prepare himself, but he knew what kind of response it would get, and I'm sure that either it was I just don't give a shit or whatever. But yeah.
Having seen so much of it, I honestly don't. I think to a certain degree, Nimoy lived in an idealized version of the world.
Yeah.
I think when he was taking all of these, and I don't consider them to be nudie photos, but for the sake of framing it the way other people might think of it, when he was snapping all these nudie photos with the ladies holding like Stars of David and stuff, which didn't happen, but that's a over a, that's a hyperbole. But I think he was thinking to himself, yeah, people are finally gonna get it. There's no way this is going to be misinterpreted. There's going to be peace and love, and everybody's going to love Shekinah. Nipples are cool too.
I think so.
Yeah, I honestly think that that's what was going through his mind. Because he just seemed optimistic.
Yeah.
And
Don't isn't our top three of Nimoy stuff?
no, we're actually doing
Oh God. What?
top three toys from Andy's room. Andy's room, of course, being a reference to Toy Story.
Buzz. Buzz Lightyear gets all three.
Why? Buzz Lightyear's the worst toy.
No, he's the best.
Hello, battery powered? You gotta change it out. Have you ever had a Buzz Lightyear toy that could talk? Have you ever had one? Because I have one.
The lasers, bro.
I'm getting mine right now.
No.
Hi,
No.
back.
No. Fuck. Oh. Why? Why is this happening? Just wanted to get to the top three. I'm punished just for bringing it up. Why? Gonna take a nap. Let's let Zach talk by himself. Good night, America.
Can you hear me?
Don't wake the baby.
Can you hear me?
Yes, don't wake the baby.
Okay, because I actually ripped my headset out of the computer, scrambling to get my toy.
God damn it.
Time to blast off for adventure.
Okay, okay.
It's really loud.
Oh yeah, it scares the crap out of cats. But my point is that to get at his batteries, like, it's impossible. They're like you need to have a special screwdriver, and there are fake screw heads on him. Like, they're supposed to be like big screws that hold his pack on. They're not real. They don't go to anywhere. So it's like trying to like you have to solve a cryptex to actually change his batteries. I love how on topic we are.
You did it. This is your fault.
You're the one who mentioned Buzz Lightyear and got me
You
all in
brought
it.
up Andy's room and his toys.
Oh, so
I said top three, and you brought up a false top three, and then I had to respond. What was I gonna say? No,
you
you're
could have
wrong, Zach.
you could have been the adult in this situation and just said move on.
Then I'm also the bad guy. All right, I don't want to be the bad guy. You know what? The kids out there.
Who have been warned not to watch or not to listen. All of you young tykes being tucked into bed.
It's like mommy and daddy are fighting.
Aw. I don't
That's what it
want.
feels like.
This is why I asked for a kiss.
I'm not gonna give you a kiss.
All right. Either way, yes, our top three is going to be Leonard Nimoy, but I want to save it to the end because there's that one part of my top three is something really beautiful that he said in one of his songs, and I'd like to end on that note.
Okay, well, then we're going to stop talking about Leonard Nimoy now because you're going to reveal all of my top threes.
Correct.
Yeah, you've already revealed one of them.
Ballad of Bilbo Baggins?
We haven't talked about that yet.
Right,
Are
but
you trying to uncover all the rest
I'm
of
trying to get them all.
them? Actually, I know you're not going to get
Oh.
all. At least, well, actually,
I'm
no,
almost
you
certain I
could.
could.
You very well could.
I'm almost certain I could.
Yeah, you probably could.
I'm almost certain I can guess them.
The bottom, though, the bottom is harder.
The bottom's always harder, but it's worth
Yeah,
it.
absolutely.
All right. So moving on, we're going to go back to Leonard Nimoy in a little bit, but I really want to talk about something that I didn't see until today. I don't know why. Sometimes people tell me about like the coolest thing I can think of, and then I'm like, oh, I'll see it later. But I think it's something. It's the Power Rangers R-rated fan film.
Yes, which is super apparently controversial, not just because of the R rating, but because of just the divisiveness of who likes it and who doesn't. It's very interesting to me.
Now, my knee-jerk reaction to R-rated was exactly the same one that Jay Riz had. I was like, are they saying it's R-rated specifically because it's porn?
No.
Like, that's all I could think of. Because
That's funny.
there are R-rated porns. There are R-rated porns.
Well, yeah, softcore.
Then some
Actually,
R.
those I think those are generally not rated.
They can be rated.
They don't, they usually aren't.
Fifty Shades of Grey.
I'm not an expert. I'm not an expert on the subject. I just, for some reason, I recall them, not being rated.
I remember those
But
dozens and dozens of notices from the Academy of Film Ranking, followed by 5 minutes of action, followed by me turning off the DVD player.
A very quick, spontaneous plug
Yes, that's
for a
exactly what I
film
just
called.
described. A
For a
very
film.
quick, spontaneous.
God damn it. No, for a film called. This film was not rated.
Which one was
It's
that one?
actually real. It's a movie that kind of exposes the rating system and the company that does it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not the. It's it, are they linked to the FCC?
No, I think they're completely separate.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just for film, I believe.
Either way, I don't think that the fan film, the Power Rangers fan film that we're talking about, was actually rated at all. It's just been dubbed the R-rated one
Right.
because of its graphic violence,
Drug reference. Drug and
reference,
drugs, yeah.
drugs, and strong language.
Yep.
And I gotta say,
And James Vanderbeek's forehead.
and James Vanderbeek's five head. I gotta say, I just need to get this out there. I love it.
It's fucking
I
awesome,
love it
isn't it?
so much.
It's so badass.
It is. Everything about it is just great.
Yes.
Wait, oh, hold on. There was one thing I wasn't crazy about. There's one thing I wasn't crazy about, and let me think for a second here. Okay, the Machine Empire plot.
Yeah.
Okay, that whole thing. Is that a reference to something that happened in Power Rangers?
No, I don't think so. And the whole thing pretty much was kind of completely separated. Like it was almost like an alternate universe of Power Rangers.
See, I would have preferred for it to be like a problem with Zed. Like they had
Yeah.
signed a treaty with Zed.
That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, I mean, what is there to spoil? It's 15 minutes of gratuitous violence, and just really great special effects. Oh, I know. Okay, from a cinematic perspective, I was not crazy about the first 20 seconds. The whole running and then I black out, running and then I black out thing. I'm not against shots like that. I think she blacked out too many times and it took too long. But that's okay. And the Black Ranger fight scene in the beginning was the pace was really off. But those are
Was
two.
actually, that was in the middle.
Huh? No,
That was kind of in the middle.
in the beginning of the fight scene.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. It was a little off pace. Those are two very technical problems with the movie. Other than that, it really is glorious.
Yes, it is. And it has, forgive me, I should have looked this up. What's her name? Starbuck. What's her name?
Tia Leone.
Oh, that's not right.
Winona Ryder.
No.
Renee Zellweger.
I hate you so much.
I've never known. Why would you ask me? I've never seen that show.
Because generally your research is more extensive than mine.
I don't actually research anything. I just know a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, your memory's better than mine also.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
Remember when we went to, I think it was TGI Fridays? Was it TGI Fridays? Or no, it was Applebee's. Remember, and you said you wanted water?
No.
Okay, well, that happened. And, like, the lady asked you, what would you like to drink? And, like, immediately you were like, water.
Yeah.
You knew, like, right off the top of your head. I didn't know what you wanted.
That has nothing to do with memory. That's my habit.
Do you remember me ordering my drink?
No.
I said, I'll have a Coke Zero, no ice. I had to think about it for a second.
But you remember the situation better than me.
Yes, but you remember the drinks better. You remember your own drinks.
Did we ever
better.
Go to Applebee's to get? Oh, yeah, we did. Oh! See, you remember. I told you. You remember better than me.
Right, but you remember your drink better.
God damn it.
You remember what you like better.
Fucking stop it. I hate you so much.
One thing you need to know about
I hate you so much, I bleed when I pee.
One thing you need to know about this podcast, boys and girls, is that Johnny's actually – he's starting a new schedule, and he was called into work at Buffalo Bayou Brewing. And it's really high stress because, Johnny, what you drinking?
Why would you do that to me? Why would you do that to me when you know I'm not drinking anything?
Take that, Batman! Have you heard this one, Batman? It will kill you!
Jesus Christ.
What?
I've
got the Joker in my soul right now because I read, I finished all of A Death of the Family.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
We'll talk about that in a second. Okay, Power Rangers.
Her name is Katie Sackhoff.
Oh, Johnny, you are the consummate comedian of our generation.
How am I a comedian? I just said her name.
Say it again.
Katie Sackhoff.
Comedy gold!
Alright.
Yes, Katie Sackhoff, she plays the Pink Ranger in this, correct?
Yes. Yes, she does. Yeah.
And this is a story of disillusioned Power Rangers, most of which who have been killed. You are actually in the midst of it. You're actually watching an interrogation between Rocky and Kimberly. And because Rocky has joined the machine planet, machine race, that's what he calls him. He's joined the machine race and he's one of their investigators now. And he wants to know where the rest of the Rangers are. Oh no, he wants to know where Tommy is because it's the one that has
specifically.
Yeah,
he's the only one that's alive.
Because Billy's dead, Zack's dead. Zack actually joined the machines too, but he was killed and nobody knows why. Because he did a lot of coke, and so he was always looking for a fight, which is basically how it's described.
Yeah, he's an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, Bulk and Skull killed Jason.
Oh, that was the most like, oh my, okay. Before, I don't want to give away all the plot, but okay. When I first started, I stumbled upon this, like it was just on Facebook, the first day it was released, and someone posted it and I looked at it and I was watching it. And Jay Free was in the room with me in the living room. And I just start making these weird faces. And I start just throwing up my hands. And I'm like, I'm speechless. And like each new turn that's going on with this thing is like just making me just exclaim more with my hands. And like, and then she's like, what is going on? I was like, I don't have words. I can't say things. Like it was just, it blew me away. And especially that Bulk and Skull thing really just threw me for a loop.
I love how personal it was. It wasn't like it wasn't the logical conclusion to the Bulk and Skull story where, okay, they were just bad through high school and now they're bad and, you know, powerful because they've joined the machines. Like, they made it personal. They were like, guess you're not going to make fun of us anymore.
Exactly. That was awesome. Like, it made them out to be the ones that were bullied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting and really really well done. God, what was I going to say? Oh, okay, favorite thing. And I know this is stupid because it's a special effect, but the power vest, the Green Ranger power vest.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a light construct. I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if we'll see that at Comic-Palooza.
I hope there's a lot of cosplay out of this.
Oh, yeah, because the updated power suits are amazing. Black Ranger looks like Spawn, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and they weren't afraid to show, like, you know, the different battle damage done to the different suits and helmets and stuff. Like, it was pretty gritty.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. The whole thing about you throwing your hands in the air and just going, what, was because the plot for a 15-minute film, it has a lot of twists and turns.
It does.
It has them, and we just mentioned that I finished reading Death of the Family.
Yeah.
Death of the Family is an example of a comic book that has a lot of twists and turns, and it does so by adding exposition. Okay? Mm-hmm. As a story, it's actually pretty dense.
Right.
This 15-minute short film gets those same dramatic twists and turns with just tiny tweaks to the story. And it's beautiful. It's nuanced. It's crazy. And it's inappropriate. I'm gonna go with Jason David Frank on this one. It's okay that it's a short film.
Yeah.
Obviously, a cinematic release of anything to this degree on this scale would be not only a monetary success, but I think it is a I don't want to say a perversion. I think that's too strong a word. But I think that it is counterintuitive to the narrative of Power Rangers.
Yeah, like in that, and to clarify what he said, he didn't show support for it. He actually was offered a role in it. And in his response, he actually didn't say that he turned it down because he didn't like the project, but he was actually just busy on another project.
Well, he also said specifically that he's a PG-13 guy.
No, that's absolutely true. And that's his, he's actually, and I had talked to Jason actually of who sometimes does Let's Plays with us, Jason Danforth. He does Edge of Blade is his name, his ID. And I was talking to him about it, and he was mentioning how he's been a proponent for a PG-13 Power Rangers for a long time. Jason David Frank has been,
and it's a good idea.
Like, yeah, and it makes perfect sense. It can appease the older fans and the younger fans. It can be something that they can all enjoy together, kind of like the Marvel movies have been, where they reach a large audience.
I think more like the most recent Batman trilogy, because aren't a lot of the Marvel movies coming out PG?
You might be right. I thought they were PG-13.
Let me check Avengers, because there's some stuff that they did in the Batman movies they cannot get away with in the Avengers.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if the Dark Knight stuff, the Dark Knight trilogy, was PG-13.
It is. They were because part of the controversy was that they were on the fence about an R rating.
That's right.
Because they were considering just go R, and yeah. They were like, no, we do have to sell the toys.
We have to make money. Yeah.
Although the Terminator movies were R, and they sold toys, you know.
Oh, Avengers is actually PG-13.
It is. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. What about the Thor movies?
Let's find out, motherfucker.
They're all PG-13.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so they could actually go darker if they wanted to.
Hmm.
Of course, Age of Ultron looks dark.
Looks very dark.
Yeah, and I've discovered some places to find. I've been reading a lot of classic comic books, and what a lot of people may not realize, if you're more of a fan of like the comic book universe and maybe you don't follow the comic books themselves or you haven't gone far enough into the backlog, a lot of the characters that we've been talking about, I'd say most of the characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now, are ancient.
Yeah.
And it's so funny to see Ultron in these things, because what usually happens is they design a character that's powerful enough to take on a whole superhero team, so they only have to introduce one new character design and then talk about the ramifications of him existing.
Right.
And then they defeat him, but they want to keep the character around, so they start putting him on villain teams. So suddenly, like, Ultron shows up in Secret Wars and he's one of the bad guys.
Right.
Yeah, he's not a big deal.
Yeah. Well, Secret Wars was a really interesting, has a very interesting history.
I haven't gotten into Secret. Have you seen all of Secret Wars? This, like, the second part, Beyonder Conquers the World.
No, I just did a brief history on Secret Wars. on like Wikipedia or something like that, because not, it wasn't long ago that they announced they're trying to merge all the different universes in Marvel.
They're trying to do
with the new Secret Wars.
They're trying to do Marvel's Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
No, I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
How are they going to consolidate? Okay, here's the most important question, and I know it's not a popular question, but how are they going to make it marketable?
I don't know. I don't care.
Doing an Infinite Crisis for Marvel means, okay, first off, Lego Marvel Universe isn't going to be the one that comes out on top. I'll tell you that right now.
No, okay? It will not.
Yeah, so there's going to be one universe, which means that Marvel Cinematic Universe doesn't exist in their continuity. Marvel Lego Universe, which is stupid, but it's popular and they produce fun games, will not exist. No more Spider-Pig. No more Ultimates Universe. Okay? They have these tremendous franchises. They're just going to erase them. They're going to say, "Well, we're not going to make some of our best-selling video games anymore. We're going to cancel some of the highest rated television shows on TV right now."
I don't think that's how it's going to work.
So what are they going to do an Infinite Crisis and they'd be like, "Oh, there's only one universe." But clearly we can see all the rest of the universes.
No, I don't think it applies to a lot of those. I don't think it's going to apply to those. I think they're just trying to do with the try to unify the comic universes.
Well, I think that's stinkawith.
Okay.
Well, how do you feel? You told me what it is. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I don't really care. I see why they're doing it, and I think that it makes sense just to have a more digestible storyline and universe. I think that it helps bring in new comic readers. So I see how it could help them on the business end. Personally, I don't have feelings either way about it.
They kind of already tried to do that with Marvel Now, but Marvel Now wasn't branded successfully. Essentially, that was like their New 52, but New 52 honestly, it rolls off the tongue better. That's why it was better.
Yeah, Marvel Now sounds really gimmicky and stupid.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think it really was. Like, they were, you know, kind of bringing their A-game to it. Okay. Final word on Power Rangers. Getting to it. Final word on Power Rangers. Should there be an R-rated cinematic release?
If I was being greedy, selfish even, I would say yes because I want to see it, but I don't think that it's a wise thing to do, and I know Saban would not allow it. I also understand that they would make more money with a PG-13 movie, and that would probably be the best and smartest way to go. But personally, I love the short film, and I really liked that this director and creator decided to do it.
What was his name again? We should give him a little plug.
I don't remember.
Give him the Warlock's bump.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very significant.
Power Rangers are rated movie.
Is it Joseph?
Joseph Kahn.
Yeah, just Joseph Kahn. Yeah, that's right.
Sign in to watch.
Anyway, I think he's done some other stuff. I wish I could remember what it was.
We don't.
But
have
I
to.
Hope
we
he
have...
does more. Huh?
We don't have to. We'll just look it up. Joseph Kahn, director. JosephKahn.com. Not gonna lie, was not expecting him to be Asian.
Really?
Yeah.
I seen a picture of him, so I already knew what he looked like. I think he's done music videos. Yeah, he's done commercials, music videos.
Okay. Let's get down. Hotspot.
Either way, I hope he continues to take things that we love and make them R-rated.
For instance?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Fervently.
Fervently
against it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's an altruism to Turtles that I never really saw in Power Rangers. Like, with Power Rangers, even when you're watching the old show, when you think about it critically, you're like, yeah, they're killing each other, and thousands of people are dying every time they get into a fight, and it's actually extremely selfish, and Zordon's a bad guy. You know? But you never really get that from the Turtles.
No, okay. I don't care. I still like to see things turn on their heads like that.
Let me ask you this. Okay. Yeah. However, given that you want to sully the good name of the Turtles, I think I know the answer.
Wait, weren't they pretty R-rated in the original comic?
I would not say R-rated.
Okay, fine.
I would not say the violence was that extreme.
Okay.
Okay. Given the wide berth that PG-13 movies are given in American cinema, referencing, of course, the Dark Knight series, where, you know, some things are pretty gruesome in those movies.
Yeah.
Knowing James Caan's taste in what Power Rangers can and should be, if he were given the blessing to do a PG-13, if he were given the blessing to do a PG-13 Power Rangers movie, do you still think it would be a good idea?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
Because we're talking...
Wait, no, hold on. Good idea as in a business sense?
Let's just say should be done. Unilateral. Everything. Should it be done? Should it be done?
Probably not.
Okay, why?
I can see it not appealing to the wider audience. The larger Power Rangers audience that is out there. It could alienate some fans.
Same question, but before the pre-production steps taken to put together the movie, Joseph Caan is put in a room where he is force-fed all of the hippie peace and love that is in Leonard Nimoy media for 3 consecutive weeks. So he comes out just beaming with positivity.
Sure, I'd like to see that.
I think we all would.
Just out of curiosity.
He turns out not making a Power Rangers movie at all. It's like a it's like a documentary about, like, the leopards of Madagascar.
Teletubbies?
No. Okay. Mr. Nimoy, as the friend that I have never, even though he is a friend that I have never met, which is a beautiful quote, by the way. I'm still reeling from that one. I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt that I don't think he would endorse a Teletubby project.
Oh, probably not.
Yeah, because it's detrimental to young minds.
Sure.
Oh, no, they did a study on it.
Okay.
Wait, did you know that, though?
Uh-huh.
Oh. You were going like, yeah, Zach's talking out of his ass again, talking about how the Teletubbies make you stupid. They do.
No, I was actually just doing a small experiment.
About what?
I was wondering if I did not inquire as to the knowledge you obtained as far to back that up. I decided just to agree with what you were saying and see if you were still going to talk about it.
Well, yeah, we're on the podcast. If there's any knowledge that I have that I feel like others may not have a grasp of or have been exposed to adequately, I'm going to share it with them so that, you know, this should be a source of knowledge. When we talk about something, you should come away knowing a little bit more, and you deserve our warriors deserve to have that knowledge be accurate.
I agree.
I'm glad.
I'm not just saying it this time.
Okay. That being said, my final word on it, PG-13 with Joseph Caan, no Leonard Nimoy torture.
Yeah.
I say go for it.
Cool.
I mean, because the Dark Knight was crazy. You had what's his face?
Christian Bale?
No, I want to say the guy who played Harvey Dent.
God damn it, Jason.
Yeah.
Oh fuck! What's his name?
Ah, Bullock. The Bullock archetype was in the first movie, and he happened to have the same last name as the real life actor. Which I don't know if you followed that sentence.
I'm not exactly sure what you're talking about.
Okay, the Michael Keaton movie.
The Michael Keaton movie.
Remember the Michael Keaton?
Oh, the first Batman?
Yeah, the first Batman movie. There was a Harvey Bullock archetype in that movie. And that cop had the same last name of the actor that I'm thinking of.
Aaron Eckhart.
Aaron Eckhart! Yeah. But it wasn't Eckhart in the first movie, it was Deckard.
Yeah.
Think about the future.
Oh, real quick.
Yeah.
It was a few podcasts ago when we had Jonesy on.
I never looked at
him. And he was challenging me. I believe both of you were challenging me that my recollection of Batman Returns was wrong, and that it was a horrible movie, and the Penguin was a horrible character.
Yeah.
No, I remember it just the way I did. It was. There's no difference. I did watch it, and it's a fine character. It is not the character we know and love from the comics or the cartoon, but it is Tim Burton's reimagining of the Batman universe, and it makes sense from coming from his mind what we saw on the screen. And it was Danny DeVito's Penguin was fine. It was creepy. It was different. He was a mutant. I understand it's different, but it was just fine.
That doesn't disprove mine and Jonesy's opinion on it.
No, but you were trying to convince me my opinion was wrong.
It is.
Oh, God.
But that's my opinion!
Yay! That's like your opinion, man.
We need to watch that one.
Yes, that's a good one.
That's The Big Lebowski, by the way.
Yeah.
Although, that was a little condescending. Everybody on the Warpod scene, all of our warriors have seen The Big Lebowski. Either way, what I was saying was in the Dark Knight, despite the fact that in a PG-13 movie you can have, you know, America's sweetheart Aaron Eckhart running around with half a face and just like scenes of torture and explosions and allusions
really
to people being burned alive on sacks of money.
That's the trick right there, is that a lot of it you don't actually see on camera. And that's why it got the PG-13 rating, because you actually don't see any of these gruesome acts happen on screen.
Yeah.
Now you do see the burned face, and that's pretty gruesome.
It's horrifying.
Yes, it is. But like I immediately thought of when the Joker gets kills Gamble and then tries to recruit his men.
Oh yeah.
Like, you don't see him stab Gamble. It's assumed, and He takes a pool cue and cracks it in half and throws it down the ground and said they're having tryouts, but they only have one opening. So you know they're about to kill each other, and one of them's going to survive, and they're killing each other with sharpened pool cues.
You do see him jab a pencil through another man's eye.
You don't actually see it, though.
Okay.
You see his head hit the table. You never see the pencil actually enter his head.
Yes, but there is still a disconnect between the way you don't see it in the Joker's audition and the way you don't see it in the Joker's meeting. Okay? It still happened on screen.
Right.
How graphic it was are shades of gray between, but it still happened on screen. You still saw it.
Kinda.
Yeah, it just wasn't as graphic as you would like.
It was well.
I'm also not convinced that it would kill somebody.
What, the pencil to the face?
Yeah, I get that it went into his brain, but your brain can take some substantial trauma before dying. It's
right,
a very
right.
interesting organ.
Death is not automatic, and realistically, the guy would be screaming like crazy after it happened.
If he hadn't died. Well, okay, yeah. What he would have felt would have been extreme ocular trauma, because there are actually no pain receptors in the brain.
Right.
So he may have just been in shock.
Yeah, and a similar injury happened in what was it called? Was it called Night Watch? What was it? What the hell is it
called? Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, the guy with the knife in his eye.
Yeah, was that the right movie? Was that what called that? With
Last Watch.
Last Watch.
Mm-hmm.
About the cop movie.
With America Ferrera.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
I'm sorry, when America Ferrera is in something, I completely forget that any other actor is in there.
Really? Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, but I'm a really big America Ferrera fan.
I'm a big Jake Gyllenhaal fan.
Goodness gracious, I didn't know. I never knew.
Yeah.
But yeah, We're way off topic.
Where do we start?
Joseph Kahn, go for it.
Just Yay!
as gritty as Hollywood will allow you to make it, but make sure it's PG-13 so that Jason David Frank can be in there, because we love you, Jason David Frank, friend of Space City Nerd.
Yeah, they had him on an interview.
Yeah, go check out that episode.
Yeah.
We'll wait.
No, go ahead. We'll be here.
Watching.
Waiting.
All right, they're back.
Oh, hey.
How's it going?
How's it going, Warriors?
All right. We're actually running a little short on time. So,
top three.
Yeah, we're going to not do the big cheese expose we were hoping to do.
Oh, thank God.
Why?
Because I wasn't really prepared for that. You know how that was introduced.
It's Swiss. Either way. What?
All right, go ahead.
No. You hit counterpoint?
The best cheese is the cheese that's in my mouth. Boom!
That would be your yeast infection, Johnny Dim.
Oh. Maybe some aged Gouda?
Much better answer. Okay. Top three! Tonight on the Warpod, our top three will be a loving memorial, once again, to the late, the great, Leonard Nimoy. One thing that I do want to make clear is that... because we are doing a top and bottom three, the bottom three do not represent things that we think are of little value. They are our least favorite among great things he did.
There's lesser value of things that he did.
Okay. So, Johnny Dim, why don't you start us off with your bottom three?
Okie doke. All right. I actually had trouble finding bad. Like you said, they're not necessarily bad things, but I was trying to find the most
they're
negative.
They're weird.
Oh, he's got some weird stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm going to start it off with he had an appearance in a show, TV show called Luke and the Tenderfoot. And I just think that might sound a slightly racist. So that makes my bottom three.
Tenderfoot is a reference to someone who has not been on the trail very long.
Oh, okay. I'm still going to leave it on the list.
It's actually a rank in Boy Scouts. Boy Scouts.
I was in Boy Scouts. I knew that.
Yeah. Why would you think that there was just like a blatantly racist rank?
I don't know. This thing was like filmed in the 50s or something.
I've been in the Boy Scouts 3 years. I'm officially a drunken Mick.
I didn't think that much about it. My plan was just to grab something that I was very unfamiliar with on his IMDb page and say, that just sounds bad. So we're going to go with that.
Which is gross. It's always gross.
It was just, it's one.
All right.
I chose to do that with one of my bottom three.
Okay, no more judgment. No more judgment.
Yeah. Back off. Okay. Second one, his rendition of Proud Mary.
Really?
I did not like it.
I enjoyed it.
I thought it was really awkward and weird.
Okay. I'm not going to say this demonstratively. This isn't the way you necessarily perceived it, but I'm going to take a guess that the reason that it sounded awkward is because there are usually a large number of words that are mispronounced in that song. Uh-huh. And Mr. Nimoy, being a scholar and a gentleman, bluntly refuses to do that, such as Big Wheels Keep on Toinin'. Proud Mary keep on boinin'. He wasn't going to justify that with a mispronunciation. He did it like a gentleman. And he wanted to make sure that every word was understood. Because there was a good message. That Proud Mary will burn at the stake for witchcraft.
Alright, also in my research, I stumbled across a YouTube video of him performing in some show. I don't even know what it was. But the name of the video is Leonard Nimoy and His Amazing Dancing Accent. And
it's time for a Let's Watch.
Yeah, that's fair.
Sold.
That's completely fair.
Type into Google, Leonard Nimoy and His Amazing Dancing Accent.
Yeah. So, and it's the first one that comes up.
Yeah, with him, he's wearing like a captain's hat.
Yeah.
A 1 minute 35 seconds on YouTube.
Yep.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm clicking the thumbnail now. And, oh, hold on. It's, yeah, it autoplayed. I am going to draw it back to minute 00. And I am hitting play on go. 3, 2, 1, go.
All right.
Shh. What is he?
He's a captain looking for a coin.
No, which Europe is he?
That's a good question.
Not really very much it is, but I never knew that you never did know it. Yeah. Oh, and he just went into Spock there.
Yeah, and he does it. He does like a little Western twang sometimes too. I love it because you don't hear anybody else. It's just they cut only his parts.
As if the entire scene is just him babbling.
Yeah. And now they're walking to the safe. But you see, okay, you find out he's trying to swindle this guy out of something, out of the coin.
Oh, hold on. So is...
He's actually a bad guy.
Okay, but not only that, is this supposed to be an act? Is the accent for the character not supposed to be genuine?
I don't know.
Because if it's supposed to be an act, if he's putting on airs as the character, it's actually kind of genius.
Kind of, yeah.
No, if that's his character pretending to be something he's not.
No, I know. I got you. See, at the end, he like completely drops it.
No, that's not stupid. That's genius. I love it. What's this from?
I have no idea.
Not to mention that even though in the beginning I thought that I was looking at one of the blights on Mr. Nimoy's resume, I couldn't help but be compelled by his very presence. Is that odd?
By Leonard Nimoy's presence?
Yeah.
No, it's not odd.
Leonard Nimoy in Gunsmoke. Oh, okay, no more Let's Watch.
Okay, so that was my bottom three, so now it's your bottom three.
I gotta say that is not what I was expecting. I assumed that it was some like song and dance routine that he did in the 1950s. Where he just like did like the most racist interpretations, like, I'm Leonard Nimoy, here I'm a dancing accents, ching chang ching chong ching, and just like as awful as it possibly could be.
That sounds just as wonderful.
Jay's reactions to me saying this stuff may be some of her finest work on the podcast.
Is she laughing? I can't hear her.
Like, no, she's just furrowing her brow at me from over her phone. All I can see are her eyes.
Nice. Tell her to freeze. You should go take a picture of that.
Oh, Dim wants a picture of you doing that. She says no.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, bottom three.
Bottom three.
It's getting more and more coordinated as we go along. Bottom three, starting with the one that I like the most out of this list. Number three, this Side of Paradise. This Side of Paradise is an episode of Star Trek original series where Spock is inundated with an alien spore that frees his emotions.
Okay.
He now has emotions, and he actually professes his love for one of his fellow crewmates, and you know they can't get him back on the ship because he knows that he'll lose all of these beautiful emotions when he goes back up there. As a concept, I get what they were going for, but as far as Vulcan lore is concerned, I wasn't wild about the concept because one of my favorite things about the 2009 Star Trek movie was that you get to see the rage of the Romulans. For those of you who don't know, the reason that Vulcans are so highly logical is because, not because they are devoid of emotions, it's because they feel stronger emotions than most humanoid species do. When they love somebody, they love them. When they hate somebody, they literally have trouble stopping themselves from killing the person that they hate. It's chaos, which is why they devote themselves to the pursuit of logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought when I first saw the episode, I was like, oh, this is going to be a really interesting exploration of the range of Vulcan emotion. And I didn't get it. What I got was Leonard Nimoy just in a hippie love cloud.
Right.
Which, you know, was fun to watch, but, you know, because it wasn't exactly what I wanted, it does fall in my bottom three.
Okay.
Okay. Number two, Mr. Nimoy's cover of Put a Little Love in Your Heart. That song was not in his range.
Yeah.
He is a beautiful baritone to bass.
Yes.
Mostly bass. And this has a wide octave range, especially when you're going, you just wait and see. He can't get there. He's kind of, there's like a, it's very breathy when he gets to right there. And it's obvious why they overlaid the backup singers so heavily when he was doing it. And, you know, nice song, not his best effort. But, you know, sometimes you swing and you miss. Yep. Which I think that speaks to Mr. Nimoy's bravery. Is that he just did whatever he felt like.
He did.
Number one, the thing that I actually like the least from the stuff that Leonard Nimoy has done is a photo series that's called Secret Selves.
Explain this.
Secret Selves was his most recent, and I think it was his last big publish as a photographer, and it was supposed to show off the dichotomy of the human condition, where it was like normal people but like dressed up in odd ways. Like you had men with very with like 5 o'clock shadows and drag and stuff like that. And it's an
didn't he take a picture of himself in this?
Let me check.
I thought he did, because I remember seeing him in drag. And it was like a black and white picture, I thought.
Most of
he does a lot of black and white.
Most of Secret Self is color.
Okay, so maybe it wasn't. I don't really remember.
That was probably just him hanging out.
Yeah. Being Nimoy.
Yeah, because whatever feels good, do it. Mm-hmm. Not whatever. It's gotta be positive.
And can't harm other people.
That's right. Of course, that's always been my creed anyway. Have I talked about this on the podcast, how I think that in a society full of responsible adults, laws wouldn't be necessary?
Not specifically, but I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I'm thinking that as long as you don't do anything to anybody that they didn't want to happen, it should be okay. Know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's gray area though.
There are gray areas, and it's a concept that does need refinement, but I think it's I think it would be a step forward. But either way, yeah, I'm looking at the Secret Selves right now. And they lack these pictures. A lot of them are very interesting concepts, but they lack the depth that the other ones did. It looks like they had a white background, and he just brought people in and just took a picture straight on.
Yeah.
And that was essentially it. You know what it looks like? It looks like stock photography.
Interesting.
And compared to some of his other stuff, which in photography that I really do enjoy, I think this was one of his weaker offerings.
Okay.
But now we have the negativity out of the way.
Yes.
Johnny Dim, top three, Leonard Nimoy. Do it.
Okie doke. My list, my top three changed a couple times as I was going through it, because I just started discovering more and more about what he did, other than, you know, the most famous of what he did, of course, was Dr. Spock, isn't it? Or is it Mr. Spock?
No, Dr. Spock is a real guy.
That's right. That's why I got – okay, and I know exactly where I went wrong.
Early childhood psychiatrist.
Yeah, my bad. So Mr. Spock.
Although he probably does carry the equivalent of several PhDs on Earth. It's just that Vulcans don't hold themselves to the lackadaisical human standards. So his genius is kind of common on his planet.
Right.
And he was a science officer, so you could say Dr. Spock.
Yeah, that's what confused me, because I knew he was anyway, fuck it. So honorable mentions real quick. The ones that ended up not making my list was his appearances on Fringe, as well as...
I've never seen Fringe. What did he do?
He played, actually... a very important character that's kind of he's a very elusive character, because he's actually the creator of like the world's biggest company that does all this technology and stuff like that, and they're so advanced, and there's actually a lot of
flip phones.
No, there's a lot of people that point fingers at his company for kind of developing stuff and
ham boning,
doing unethical things.
Sorry, I'm manic today.
You are. Anyway, what's his name?
Ryan Seacrest.
Man, this sucks.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. Other dead actors.
No. So.
We're just going to drop that whole line of thought.
No, I'm actually, there was a pause because I was looking it up.
Oh.
Okay, yeah. So Dr. Walter Bishop is one of the main characters, and he's the good guy. And Nimoy actually plays kind of they're partners, lab partners, I guess, in a way. And so what ended up happening was they ended up getting into some darker sciences and started doing stuff in other dimensions and stuff like that. And Leonard Nimoy's character actually goes and kind of goes the darker. Dr. William Bell is his character's name. And Dr. William Bell goes and starts his company while the other guy,
Jason Gordon-Levitt,
Dr. Walter Bishop, he goes off the deep end, and he ends up in an insane asylum for many years. And so while he's in the insane asylum, Dr. Bell goes off and does his company, and it's this big thing. And he shows up very rarely in the show. He only shows up once in the first season. And he's kind of, like I said, he's kind of an elusive character because nobody can ever get a hold of him. He does all this communication and stuff through basically this woman that kind of, I don't know if she's a president or a vice president, where she's very high up in the company, and she's an executive of some sort, and she does all of his business for him.
Does it ever get to a point where he's become so difficult to get a hold of? He's like that friend that you only call every once in a while because you don't want to be let down consistently. Where he's like, "Hey guys, do you want to go save the Fringe? Sure. Do you want to bring Spock? You know he's not gonna come. I mean, it's Wednesday. When's the last time you got him on a Wednesday?
Don't even try."
But he still gets the credit.
Right,
it's like special guest star Leonard Nimoy.
He does a pretty good job with it, though. It's a really good show, and it's one of the ones I've been wanting to watch for a couple of years now. So I'm finally getting through it. It's a really good show. But anyway, I like his character in that. I like how he kind of like he almost gets. It's Leonard Nimoy, right? So he gets this like this senior role, and you get that kind of like you're almost starstruck in a way. When he just shows up finally, and it kind of, I don't know,
much like when that friend actually shows up to your birthday party.
Exactly.
Oh, I didn't know you were even interested in saving the Fringe, dude. I save the Fringe all the time with my other friends. It's just that you don't like hanging out with them, and that's why sometimes I don't answer. But I still like you.
I love it that you're calling it saving the Fringe.
That's all I know about the show.
It's a reference to Fringe science, obviously. Okay. But anyway, I'm gonna stop rambling on about it. It's a good show, and I like his appearance in it so far. And I'm sure he shows up more than once, but I've only seen him the one time.
That's Abrams, right?
Yes, J.J. Abrams. And that's part of the reason I wanted to see the show, because it was one of his first big things. The other honorable – and this is only my honorable mention. I need to get through this. The other honorable mention was just the Bilbo Baggins song he does, which is great. What?
It's on – like, that's not an honorable mention to me. It's on my list.
Oh, I love it, but it got bumped by the I Walk the Line cover that I discovered right before the podcast. Now, I thought that was fucking brilliant.
That's
I love
one
it.
From him that I haven't heard. Is it? Tell me something. Is it groovy?
No, it's not. I don't think it's terribly far removed from the original. I just love that he did that. I think it sounds good.
Oh yeah.
It's super solid.
Those are two men with pretty similar voices.
Yeah, very true, and that's why it works so well. My number two actually is The Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only because it's a good movie and his performance is solid, as it always is, as Spock when he's playing Spock, but What's great about this is just how it hit me so hard in the feels when certain parts of this movie, because I had no idea when I saw this movie recently that Spock dies at the end.
Really?
I had no clue.
Oh, that's like the most magical thing to like get to experience that at like the height of your fandom.
Yeah.
Like, cause like they're so like our parents got that. And like,
yes.
And like, because our parents introduced us, like we all knew as kids. And so it wasn't like a big deal. And like, that's the most, that might be the greatest gift that you'll ever get from Mr. Nimoy.
It's probably true. And it was a heck of an experience.
Oh,
and
sorry. Jay Riz wants to know. Okay. He had very recently actually finished Wrath of Khan, and he didn't know that the death scene was coming up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, right? Okay, knowing that, let me ask you this. What did you think Search for Spock was about?
Now that I've seen the movie?
No, knowing that Search for Spock existed beforehand, but not knowing that he dies at the end of Wrath of Khan, what assumptions did you make about Search for Spock?
I mean, very vague. I can only assume like that maybe Spock disappeared and went on some type of a pilgrimage, and he's. I mean, they're searching for him. I mean, it wasn't much. I thought. I mean, I don't know.
That's fair.
Yeah, but anyway, there's something I divulged to you off air that I wanted to share with the audience too. Is the of course at the beginning you have to remind me again. The name of the test that Kirk aced, what was it called?
The Kobayashi Maru.
Correct, yeah.
He
so,
did not ace it, he cheated.
He cheated, yeah, you're right. Okay. But anyway...
Hold on, J-Riz wants to weigh in.
In the original timeline...
Can you hear her?
Yes.
Wasn't considered cheating.
In the original...
Oh, right, I knew that, yeah. So the original timeline, she said... He was not known to have cheated.
In the original timeline, he was known to have cheated. The difference is that he was rewarded for cheating,
right,
instead of chastised.
They mentioned that actually in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and because she brings that up because in the new 2009 release of Star Trek, wait, was it that was it 2009?
Yes.
Yeah. So when that movie came out, he was chastised. Chastised. Yeah. But anyway, what I was trying to get to was, so
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant.
Take off the Bryant.
Yeah.
Add Lane Kobe? Bryant. Okay, now add Lane to the beginning of Bryant.
Kobayashi Maru. I got it.
There we go.
Okay. So Christy Alley's character, who mm-hmm. plays I think she's a half Vulcan.
Savik. Wait, no, Savik's his brother, isn't it? No, Savik's
Christy Alley. Her.
Okay.
Yeah, Savik.
Christy Alley, is she half Vulcan? She looks half Vulcan, but
yeah, her ears are not as pronounced.
Well, actually, with half Vulcans, it's the forehead that changes.
Okay.
Yeah, but the thing is, with female characters, sometimes they're just like, you know what, you don't look as alien as you should.
Either way, she's taking the test, and she fails it, as everybody does, unless you cheat. And... So, everybody, of course, that's on the staged bridge has to act and play dead because there's explosions and stuff. And so Spock plays dead and whatever. And when Captain Kirk, outside of the test, the Kobayashi Maru, he's walking down the hallway, and the first line out of his mouth when he sees Spock outside of the test is... aren't you supposed to be dead? And it was kind of a weird moment to experience right after, you know, I'm watching this the day, I think it was the day of when we found out that he passed away. So it was a really weird moment for me.
Yeah. And that's like, that's some of the best foreshadowing that's been done in Star Trek. In that instance, there's something I could go into that they did in Voyager that I really, really liked, but I'm not going to do it right now.
Okay, number one.
Number one! Ah, you did it!
Number one.
We're there!
Yep, is actually his photography. I really liked the photography he did with the large naked women.
Oh, his full body series.
Yeah, I found it interesting. I found it... very telling about him and his character and what and his the way he views art. And I think that and I really the respect he has for the human body. So I thought it was really interesting. And we talked about it earlier, so I'm not going to go into really in depth about it. But it really piqued my interest.
What I particularly like about that line is that when you look at his other nudes, they don't look like those models. It seems to me that he was just sitting around one day, maybe even going through his portfolio, and he was like, you know what? I don't have any big women. And then he just went out and got it.
Yep.
He's a man on a mission.
Complete. Yeah, he had to collect them all.
Because they are objects. They are trophies to be won.
Maybe.
Yes, Jerez, I'm talking about women. I am not surprised to be won. Come on. You're welcome, father. All right. Either way, I guess it's time for my top three.
Yes.
Top three, the greatest and brightest and bestest that Mr. Nimoy's legacy left for us that will continue to entertain, I'm sure, throughout the generations. I think that because there's so much recorded media of him that's actually just so brilliant, and since the unfortunate thing is that a death always rekindles interest in an individual. Sometimes we don't get an opportunity to appreciate them as much as we could have in life. But I think that once people start really delving into the recorded media of Mr. Nimoy, it will continue to entertain for generations. I really believe that. Number three, The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins.
Yay!
What could be happier than Mr. Spock lying on a beach, hanging out with young, energetic teenagers with, and the interesting thing is, like, there is this huge age disparity between, like, all the backup dancers and singers, but it's Nimoy, so it's not weird. You know, he's just like, oh, yeah, he took the kids out to the beach, whatever. Yeah, I trust Nimoy.
Yeah, that's super believable.
So he's just hanging out and singing about a Tolkien book.
It's pretty magical.
The kids they're all in very smart sweaters and they're wearing badges that say Frodo lives, and I actually saw an extended one. It looks like somebody actually did a reel-to-reel film recording of a black and white television. it's tagged on to the end, and one of the last, and the production is such crap, it really is, but I love it. Back in the 60s they really didn't care. You know, it was whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
And one of it's the very end of the song, and it's talking about Frodo coming back to the Shire, and all of the kids start to gather around him and leaning also nonchalantly on the rocks, and one of them comes up and they stick a badge on him, and it just says, "What is a Leonard Nimoy?" And like, it's so
that's
stupid
fucking awesome
that it has to be funny. So, Ballad of Bilbo Baggins takes the number three slot. Number two, the death scene to Wrath of Khan. The death scene to Wrath of Khan. Yeah. I talked about this in our Let's Plays, which once again you can check out on YouTube.
YouTube Bizzle.
I think I talked about this in our Let's Play of Assassin's Creed Unity, that I wasn't wild about the conflict resolution.
You did mention that.
Yeah, it's just that
hopefully it made the cut. We had a lot of tries on that game.
Yeah, but essentially at the end of Wrath of Khan, for those of you who don't remember, haven't seen it, he beats Khan. Obviously, they beat Khan, but Spock notices that all of his maneuvers seem to be on a 2D plane. So he's thinking, maybe Khan's never flown a spaceship before. Let's dive and then come up at him. And that takes him out. One of the greatest minds in the universe, and is like, he couldn't figure out the spaceship. So I'm not wild about some aspects of that movie, but the death scene between the two of them, it's really just beautiful. It's a classic piece of cinema. It was juxtaposed extremely well in the most recent Star Trek Into Darkness. It's a classic. I mean, what else can you say? And then number one, and this is one thing that I and we can go ahead and say goodbye everybody now, and you know, say just say thank you once again to you know, Saban, everybody involved with Power Rangers, and of course thank you to
Joseph Kahn.
Thank you to Joseph Kahn. Thank you to and of course thank you to Mr. Nimoy. But there was one thing that I wanted to leave you with, and it was something that he said in a song. It's actually spoken beat poetry that has music overlay, and it's a song called Where It's At. Now, Where It's At was an expression in the 1960s and 70s, and it was used to describe like a happening place where all the cool stuff's happening. Okay? It's like, hey, you know the Dairy Queen? That's where it's at. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is kind of one interesting thing about
for the millennials, it's like saying what's trending.
Yes, yes, that's an extremely good analog. But one thing that's interesting about Leonard Nimoy is that there is a very odd connection between Leonard Nimoy and Spock, because he played the character for so long and he set the groundwork for so much of what Vulcans were going to be. And you know, did so many guest appearances and wrote so much and directed so much. There was a lot of Leonard Nimoy and Spock, but by the end of it, there was also a lot of Spock and Leonard Nimoy. So, and that actually shines through in two autobiographies he did, which were called "I Am Not Spock," and then like 20 years later, he released one called "I Am Spock."
Yep.
He himself wrestled with it, and while this is not this was not released as on one of his Spock albums, I don't believe it was. It is considered to have been done in the Spock character, and what this is Spock, well, not Spock, but Leonard explaining where it's at. Loving someone more than you love yourself, loving so much that you trust, you give, and you ask nothing in return. This is the purest form of love. And then, and this is the miracle, if the one you are giving to believes as you, you found it. The treasure you've been seeking, you've found where it's at. Now I'd like to say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.